The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We're coming to you live today, once again, from our studio in Edstone, England. On yesterday's program, I talked about how much safer Jerusalem is than Chicago. And then today, as if right on cue, we see headlines all over the place about tensions rising in Jerusalem, about tensions being at their highest in years. And really, the situation on the ground there in Jerusalem has been pretty tense for the past 6 days since a terrorist attack on the Temple Mount last Friday. And this week on the program, if you've been listening to the last couple of shows, we've spent a fair bit of time talking about the King of the South, the Islamic Republic of Iran. And so on today's show, I think it's fitting that we zoom in on Jerusalem because, as many of our listeners know, Jerusalem is the powder keg. Jerusalem is the trigger that sets off World War III. That's what Jesus Christ prophesied. So coming up later in today's program, we're actually going to go live to our correspondent in Jerusalem, Brent Noctegal. He just made it back to his apartment, so we'll be going through some other headlines here at the start. And then coming back with Brent on the next segment. So you'll want to make sure that you stay tuned for that. Well, just to follow up on, I got a few emails in response to yesterday's program. One of them that came from Canada, who said that after we talked about all of this craziness, the gender neutrality and such, she went on to a news site there in Canada and saw the Twitter feed of this particular site talking about the genderless baby. Again, we referenced that story on yesterday's show as well. And then another one, this one coming in from California, and she too is responding to yesterday's show about the ridiculous transgender and no gender movement. And she says here, she actually comes from England originally, but she said that the movement just highlights to me how Ephraim, or Britain today, is like the Hosea 7:11 description, a silly dove without sense. You can go and look at that prophecy on your own time. But she writes here, it's so disturbing to see how everyone is just following along like sheep. Even the heads of our state, even our leaders, endorsing all of this craziness. She said, it just makes me wonder, if we can't call each other he or she without offending, what do we become? What is it we become if we can't address each other as he or she? She says, I even read last month how a Jewish school failed 3 Ofsted inspections because it will not teach LGBT to its students. So they've failed the government inspections. It says Ofsted has such power in the UK, it can even close schools if they don't comply. She sent me the headline reporting on this particular case. Private religious school fails 3rd Ofsted inspection because it does not teach about LGBT. You have to teach it. Doesn't matter if you're a religious school. You got to get on board with this. You got to go along. You have to accept it. You have to celebrate it, in fact. Well, as our listener pointed out there at the end, and if you heard the end of yesterday's program, I mean, God has a lot to say, including in the first chapter of the Bible. He has a lot to say about gender. He has a lot to say about male and female. And she says here, I was reading Genesis 1 this morning about God doing his creating. It's so good to review that every once in a while and to get back to that trunk of the tree. Everything is so simple, so beautiful, so perfectly structured when done God's way. There is no confusion. And then she says, this world is tying itself in knots with the confusing practices it's getting into. And that certainly is true. Just today, Sam sent me, Sam is back, by the way, back from his honeymoon. He looks rested and refreshed. He looks eager to get back into work. We've missed him, although we've had some wonderful helpers filling in along the way. In any event, again, this follows yesterday's show. He sent me this from the New York Times. Britain cracking down on gender stereotypes in advertising. And so you've got the authorities cracking down on schools, even private schools. And now, as the New York Times reports, cracking down on advertising on television. And listen to this article. It says, one ad for baby formula showed a little girl growing up to be a ballerina and a little boy becoming a mathematician. Another ad for a weight loss drink asked if viewers were beach body ready and showed a bikini-wearing woman whose bronzed image, critics said, promoted an unrealistic standard of beauty. A third ad, it says, for a video game showed the American actress, well, it goes on into some of the women and how they're portrayed, not that ads can't be improved, but what's behind it is just what's so shocking. You have to go along. It says, Britain's advertising regulator, reacting to these ads and similar ones, announced Tuesday that new rules would be developed to ban advertising that promotes gender stereotypes or denigrates people who do not conform to them. Can you believe this? Now they're going after the ads. As Melanie Phillips said yesterday, I mean, what was once bizarre, not just but a few years ago, it's now tolerated, it's now adopted as mainstream, and it's now compulsory. I mean, you've got to go along. It says here the regulator, the Advertising Standards Authority, released a report titled Depictions, Perceptions, and Harm, asking whether existing regulations, they're asking if the current regulations address the potential for harm or offense arising from the inclusion of gender stereotypes in ads. The answer the report found is no. In other words, the current regulations, they're not strong enough. We've got to really crack down on this. I mean, if you produce a commercial showing a little girl that grows up to be a ballerina, that could potentially harm someone. This is coming from the British government's advertising regulator. The article says here the agency found that stereotypes could restrict the choices, aspirations, and opportunities of ad viewers, especially girls and teenagers who are figuring out their identities and goals. So they're trying to figure out their identity. It says our review shows that specific forms of gender stereotypes in ads can contribute to harm for adults and children. That's quoting the lead author of the report. She says such portrayals can limit how people see themselves, how others see them, and limit the life decisions they take. Now you think about what's happening in Britain and all over the world, really. Of all the things to worry about in our society today, this is what gets the focus. This is what gains so much attention from the authorities, just like the listener wrote in. I mean, it's coming right from the top. Heads of state, kings, princes, queens and such, royalty. My father, by the way, has an article. I think I brought it here with me. It's in the next Trumpet magazine, the September issue, The Fall of the British Royal Family. And he goes, in this article, he just goes step by step, all that's been happening to the royal family here in the UK. I mean, it's been a rough year for Britain as a whole. All of these terrorist attacks, that horrific fire a month ago, that's going on. And yet, of all the problems that we're facing, look at where the focus is. Again, I went through a fair bit of this with you yesterday. Listen to this from the New York Times. It says, the Committee of Advertising Practice, which sets British advertising standards in consultation with the industry, will develop new standards starting later this year. The Advertising Standards Authority, an independent body, will then enforce those rules. See, it's just all happening so fast. And my father brings it out in that article. Again, that's coming out in the next issue of the Trumpet magazine. It'll probably be posted or featured on the website soon. You can actually get to it if you run a search. But it's a strong conclusion. That article, as he goes through verses like in 2 Peter 2 and Jude verse 7. Well, just to finish this article, while advertising is only one of many factors that contribute to unequal gender outcomes, tougher advertising standards can play an important role in tackling inequalities and improving outcomes for individuals, the economy, and society as a whole. That's according to the chief executive of this governing body, the Advertising Standards Authority. The specifics, the article says, have yet to be developed, but the regulator offered some examples. And so here you go. It would be inappropriate and unrealistic to prevent ads from, for instance, depicting a woman cleaning. But, it said, an ad which depicts family members creating a mess while a woman has sole responsibility for cleaning it up might be banned under the new guidelines. So here is this governing body that's going to decide this is okay, that's not okay. If you portray it this way, it's all right, but it's got to be just so. It's just absolute craziness. Just as Melanie Phillips said, I mean, something that was just common and common sense and accepted not that many years ago. Now that's seen as extreme. While the bizarre and the extreme of yesteryear, that is seen as normal and mainstream. This article goes on and talks about how many companies that this could impact here in the UK that have been putting out commercials and to even hint at traditional roles. You can't do that. You're not going to be able to do that with these new rules, these new regulations. It says here, finally, the industry's project to address stereotypes in ads, which began in April 2016, has not been universally praised. In an article in the Times of London, Andrew Elson called the proposed new standards an assault on freedom of speech. Well, I should say, what an assault this is. But see, LGBT rights, it trumps freedom of speech. It trumps some of these other freedoms. Because you've got to get on board with it. It's now mainstream. It's now compulsory. The article concludes here, but Lindsay Clay, chief executive of Thinkbox, a marketing group in Britain, called the report a wake-up call for the advertising industry. She said the new standards should not be regarded as a restriction, but as an opportunity for greater creativity. See, this is great. This is great. You can just get more creative in how you portray families, quote-unquote, on TV or in an ad. Well, the article that my father just produced, The Fall of the British Royal Family, it's coming out at a perfect time. It really is. I touched on this just briefly yesterday. But look at the prophet. Forget about Genesis. That's where that history with Sodom and Gomorrah is recorded. But look at what the New Testament writers had to say. Look at what the Apostle Peter had to say. And turning the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes, condemn them with an overthrow, making them an example unto those that after should live ungodly. That's what they are. They're an example. And my father goes into that word in his article. I mean, it's there for a warning. It's a warning for us. This is what we're facing. It's like what one of you listeners wrote in and said. I mean, if we live like Sodom and Gomorrah, how does that end? Well, look into the history book. Look into God's inspired word. Look into the book of Genesis. Look into the first chapters of the Bible. Genesis 1 and 2, and then you get into that history with Sodom and Gomorrah. Later on in the book, Genesis 18, 19, 20, somewhere in there. What a warning it is. Family, as I covered yesterday, I mean, family is a sacred institution created by God, ordained of God, marriage and family. Because God himself is a family. That's why he made it from the very beginning. And the foundation, the stability of God's coming kingdom, it's going to rest on family. And that's why, as we've said so many times before, the strong families are like the backbone of the nation. And now you see, whether it's the governing bodies overseeing the schools or the ads or whatever, it's just an all-out assault on the traditional family, on the family as it's defined in the Holy Bible. Here's what Jude had to say. Verse 7 of his short book, it says, "Even as Sodom and Gomorrah and the cities about them in like manner, giving themselves over to fornication and going after strange flesh, are set forth for an example, suffering the vengeance of eternal fire." Jude mentioned that example as well. And so did Peter, as I just read. Look at what those cities were getting caught up into. I mean, look at what the name of the city, in the case of Sodom, look at what it means even to this day. Satan's going after family. And here in the last few years, I mean, we've just seen this shocking attack. It's all, as I said a moment ago, I mean, it's all just happening so incredibly fast. And both of those prophecies, 2 Peter 2, and of course, Jesus brings it out too, as in the days of Noah, or as in the days of Lot, he said. In other words, Lot had to flee that city because fire came down from heaven. That's what universal sin leads to, universal destruction. Mr. Armstrong, Herbert Armstrong, brings that out in his writings, The Incredible Human Potential, Mystery of the Ages. That's the lesson from the flood. That's the lesson from Noah's day. It's the lesson from the days of Lot, Sodom and Gomorrah. And we're facing the same thing today. As I say, go and make sure you read that article that my father just produced. It's coming out in the September issue of the Trumpet magazine, The Fall of the British Royal Family. He says here in the subtitle, "This has been a bad year for Britain and its royal family, and here's why it will get much worse. Before it gets better than you can even imagine, it's going to get a lot worse before God finally intervenes to correct it." You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. When we come back, we will be hooking up live with our correspondent in Jerusalem, Brent Nachtigall, to give us the very latest on what's happening there in the city of Jerusalem. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Jerusalem. The name means City of Peace, and yet no city has had a history filled with more war and bloodshed. No city has suffered like Jerusalem. It has been the focal point of religious wars throughout the centuries. Jerusalem plays a central role in the beliefs of three major religions: Judaism, Islam, and Christianity. To the Arabs and Jews, Jerusalem is a national symbol. While both sides have attempted to form peace treaties, Jerusalem continually remains the center of dispute. Why all this conflict surrounding Jerusalem? Will the Israeli-Palestinian peace process put an end to the chaos? Will there ever be peace in Jerusalem? The Holy Bible provides the answers concerning the future of this great city. Your Bible states that the tensions revolving around Jerusalem are only going to worsen before they get better. This city will be engaged in some of the worst violence ever to occur in the history of man. But there is great hope for Jerusalem. At the conclusion of these painful events, Jerusalem will experience glory and magnificence as no city ever has, and there will finally be peace in Jerusalem. To understand the important role Jerusalem will play in future events, visit our literature library on thetrumpet.com and request our free booklet, Jerusalem in Prophecy.
The the developed nations have made awesome progress. They have produced a highly mechanized world, providing every luxury, modern convenience, and means of pleasure. Yet they are cursed with crime, violence, injustice, sickness and disease, broken homes and families. At the same time, more than one half the world is living in illiteracy, abject poverty, filth and squalor. Violence and destruction are rapidly multiplying. Many ask, why, if God exists, does He allow so much violence and human suffering? To understand the reason behind this astonishing paradox, request a complimentary copy of Mystery of the Ages. We were born into this 20th century world as it is. We take it for granted, but we can't explain it. It's like viewing a movie at a point already near the end. We see what is occurring at that point, but not having seen it from the beginning and not knowing how events developed to the point of viewing, we simply cannot understand what we are seeing. Mystery of the Ages transports you back to the beginning of the movie, to the foundation of this present evil world. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
And we are back, and we are on the phone with our Jerusalem correspondent, Brent Noctegal, on Skype, actually. I can see him here in the booth. You can't see him. You're only going to be hearing him. But what I see is a freshly tanned face who just came back from a media tour this afternoon. And I think in the midst of this tour, Brent spoke with Mickey Rosenfeld, the foreign press spokesman for the Israeli police, while at a strategic lookout. Is that a conversation you had today then, Brent?
Yeah, all of this basically happened in the last 3 or 4 hours and raced back from the old city to join you on the radio here.
Okay, so why don't you give us a rundown of what you discussed with the foreign press spokesman?
So he basically went over the incident that took place last Friday. I'm sure a lot of your listeners are aware. There was a terrorist attack, really an unprecedented terrorist attack in Jerusalem. Although we hear about terrorist attacks a lot, this one was rare because it was instigated from within the Temple Mount compound itself. That I don't believe that's actually ever happened before. And your listeners remember there were three terrorists, two of which were armed with semi-automatic weapons. Well, actually, no, automatic weapons. They were machine guns. And another was armed with a knife. They actually ran from the Temple Mount out to the northern gate of that towards the Lion's Gate, which is the closest entrance point for Muslims at the northern segment of the Temple Mount, and attacked two police officers from behind, mowing them down. And then they ran back towards the Temple Mount, and that was where the third one of them, well, that's where they were shot, along with the third one that tried to attack police with a knife. And as I said before, the police have released footage of this. They weren't even looking in the direction of the Temple Mount because it hasn't happened before. Basically, they try and prevent people, armed people, from entering the Temple Mount to protect the worshippers and protect that area. But this time, they came from that direction.
So what, like I mentioned here before you came on the air, it was the Times of London that reported that over the weekend they had searched the compound and found a cache of weapons. But you're saying that the reporting over there has not yet confirmed whether or not there were weapons on the inside.
Yeah, according to Mickey Rosenfeld, again, he's the press spokesman for the police here. He cannot report on that. That might have been a leak that's been found, but it isn't official just yet. The Temple Mount was closed to everybody for about a day and a half or 2 days so that the police could search out this large compound. I think it's about 35 acres from the top of my head. That includes the Dome of the Rock. It includes the Al-Aqsa Mosque. And they wanted to, and underneath them are huge tunnel systems, and they just wanted to check there was no weapons cache that was found. Because what we've had so far is that for the Temple Mount itself, if you wanted to visit the Temple Mount, you had to go through a security security gate, basically, walk through a metal detector, all your bags and things would be checked through an X-ray machine. That's for tourists and Jews. But out of respect for the Arabs and the fact that it's their site and they didn't intend, they wouldn't think that anybody, they wouldn't attack their own, they allowed them to enter without any type of metal detection, without any type of security check, apart from the odd spot check. If the police saw them approaching, they would say, "Can I have a look at your passport?" before they entered. And now what the worry is, according to Mr. Rosenfeld, is that that may have to change, and it has changed right now with the use of these, setting up these metal detectors, so that they can check that no weaponry is being brought on the Temple Mount, so it can't be used as a staging ground for attacks against Israelis.
And is that what these three attackers were trying to accomplish? What, to make it a staging ground for an attack?
Well, it looks like that. It looks like that. It was definitely unprecedented because it obviously hasn't happened before. They did target specifically Israeli police. That's who they were going after. And just the big hoopla right now is that the Palestinians themselves are refusing, many of them, to visit the Temple Mount to pray in Al-Aqsa Mosque because now they have to walk through a metal detector. And to them, that's changing the status quo that's existed ever since 1967, which determined that while this is sovereign territory of Israel, and Israel is responsible for the security of it, the Jordanian Islamic Trust, the Waqf as they're called, they would organize or they would ensure day-to-day run day-to-day activities on the Mount, so they wouldn't be an Israeli police presence there. And they are the ones that were meant to be responsible to ensure that things like this happened didn't happen on the Mount itself. Now Israel is coming in saying, well, they can't be trusted to do that. We have to ensure that no weaponry makes it onto the Temple Mount. So we're going to force you until we find out a solution to walk through metal detectors. And you would think that that wouldn't be a big deal to walk through three or four metal detectors. But apparently, and I saw it today, East Jerusalemites are up in arms. Palestinians in the West Bank are up in arms. And Muslims throughout the world are up in arms about it as well.
Yeah, you mentioned that about the security going in, if you're a Jew or a Christian as compared to Arabs. Are there separate entrances for the two groups?
Yeah, if you're going to enter as a tourist, it's the Maghrabi Gate. That is the gate that's right along, just up from the Western Wailing Wall. And then the Muslims will enter from a different gate towards the north, which was where this attack took place.
And so the police that are at that northern gate, is that the Waqf or the Israeli police?
The Waqf themselves, they operate from the inside. The Israeli police are on the outside. And what I thought was interesting, seeing the metal detectors set up today, the metal detectors aren't really an affront to the Temple Mount itself because they're not even in the Temple Mount. They are far before the entrance of the Temple Mount. But I was there for about half an hour, didn't see one Muslim worshiper go on the Mount. There have been, in the past week or so since Israel opened it up to worshippers, there have been a few hundred that have gone on the Mount, but I didn't see one do it. Looks like they're digging their heels in until Israel takes away these metal detectors.
Right, and that's what they're sort of their way of protesting the fact that the status quo has changed. Israel's put on these metal detectors, and so, well, we're not going to go through them. And they're just, where are they? I mean, I think I read one article that said they're having prayers and things even outside of the Temple Mount.
Yeah, so I was there for midday prayers today, outside the Temple Mount, right by the Lion's Gate, where this was being held. I think there were about 200 people praying, probably about 50 foreign press and Israeli press there watching this. And it was interesting what happened, because even talking with Mr. Rosenfeld before, after his briefing, I noticed that I don't have a good clip of that. I'm sorry, the sound didn't work too well in the wind. But he was saying that there have been the local residents of Jerusalem going on to the Temple Mount, and it hasn't been too much of a big deal. That is the Muslims going in for morning prayers. But it's towards the afternoon, midday onwards, where things get heated. And that's because you have a lot of these exterior other groups trying to influence the situation. He talked about how a couple of days ago there was an Islamic funeral that was taking place just by the Lion's Gate. There's a cemetery there. There's about 50 people there. partaking of that. And then this foreign group came in the afternoon, tried to rile them up and led them on a march towards Israeli police towards the Lion's Gate. So it's like you have, and this is what I witnessed today, it's like you have two groups. You have the local Jerusalemites that seem to not care too much, understand the security situation, understand that, you know, they need to set up metal detectors and walk through these places, walk through them to operate to get into the Temple Mount. But you have other groups, and he wouldn't be specific, the police spokesman, but other groups that want to leverage this situation to make it blow up every time. Every time they have a prayer, five times a day. And that's what I saw today. I saw 200 people seem to bow down for their prayers fairly, very peacefully, it seemed. And then as soon as that ended, they started chanting and chants that are obviously about Israel, obviously about getting access to Al-Aqsa. And just as I walked away, I probably walked away about 70 meters back through the gate into the old city. And there were stun grenades that were going off. To try and disperse the crowd. Apparently, one person was inciting violence against the police that were just there. Then it turned out that people were throwing bottles at the police. Police tried to arrest them, this man, and then it kind of exploded from there. So, and then they've got two more times today that they're going to be praying. And each time, this is what happens. It's because, one of the reasons is because, according to Mr. Rosenfeld, there are outside groups that are trying to use this situation to really draw attention to the situation and hopefully lead it into a more volatile situation where you have attacks on Jews, attacks outside the Temple Mount, get it more worldwide attention as much as they can.
Well, even their own leaders are calling for a day of rage. So they are, as you say, they're using this as a way to incite violence and division.
Yeah, and it is true, as you say, their leaders, Fatah, the leader of Fatah, came out and said that one of the leaders, that we're going to have a day of rage to protest against what they call Israel's changing of this status quo, which, again, it's not really changing the status quo. They can still, the access to the Temple Mount hasn't changed. They can still get there. They just got to go through a metal detector. Mm-hmm. And the eyes of the Arab world are on this situation. We actually had the chance to listen to the head of the Islamic Waqf. They report, this is basically a branch of the Jordanian government that reports back to the king. And then the Jordanian government will report to Israel things that are going on. That's the way it works. We listened to him speak, and he said he's upset. As part of the Waqf, they are telling people not to go onto the Temple Mount until Israel takes down these gates, as they're calling them, security gates. But they're a metal detector. There's no gates. They're just trying to change the terminology of this. But then I heard the Sheikh of the Al-Aqsa Mosque start speaking as well, and he correctly said that this is kind of becoming an issue that all Muslims around the world are watching. And I do have a clip of that, and I think Sam could probably play that for you.
And I can say that now all the Muslim eyes, it's really directed toward Al-Aqsa Mosque. They are really concerned about what's going on here, especially these days. And they are really concerned about the Jewish attacks toward, like, Al-Aqsa and the Muslims worshippers.
The Jewish attacks.
Yeah, that's how they're seeing this. This is the reporting. It's not about the attacks that actually happened against the Jewish soldiers. It is this Jewish attack upon the Muslims for making them walk through metal detectors to get to the Temple Mount. And as he said at the start, the eyes of the Arab world are really on this right now, which, right, I just walked there. It seems absolutely crazy that such a small patch of earth demands this much attention, and attention that looks to make it more volatile than a situation than it actually is.
Right. Well, going back to the weekend, I assume when they searched the compound, does that mean that this is the Israeli authorities saying to the Waqf, move aside, we're going to go check everything? And if they do that, does that mean they're going into both of the mosques and into those tunnels underneath?
Yes. Yes, they would have checked absolutely everything in those couple of days. And that's another reason why the Muslims would be upset about that, because you've got Israeli police going into these mosques. Right. But it's understandable. Basically, one of the head of the Waqf was asked a question by a reporter and said, well, if the Israelis can't set up metal detectors, what are you going to do to ensure the security situation? Basically, they said, well, Israel's responsible for the security situation. We're not. So they are just digging their heels in, and they don't have a solution for it. And apart from, we're going to wait this out. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be more and more and more international pressure put on Israel to take down these metal detectors, it seems.
Well, let me just read to you that report from the Times. I just think this is so interesting because, I mean, this could be a game changer. If there's weapons there, I mean, they're obviously not there now if Israel has gone through and searched it out. But this is just in the Times of London this morning. It says, tensions in Jerusalem are at their highest in years. The latest unrest began on Friday when three gunmen shot and killed two Israeli police officers stationed at one of the entrances to the mosque. Police closed the complex for 2 days, and officers who searched it over the weekend said that they found a cache of weapons and ammunition, including a submachine gun. That's in the UK. And again, if there's still some debate as to whether that's been confirmed or not, I guess we can just wait and see. But as you said earlier, I mean, the fact that it was an attack and that it's on the Temple Mount and that tiny little piece of real estate demands so much attention. I mean, it is, as the city of Jerusalem is in the broader perspective, it's the powder keg that's going to just set the whole region on fire.
For sure. And I think Yehuda Glick, we ended up speaking to him after. He's a member of the Knesset. He's the one that was shot numerous times. I think he took 3 bullets to the chest and survived a few years back. But he advocates prayer on the Temple Mount, Jewish prayer on the Temple Mount. Right now, that is against the status quo that's existed since 67. Jews are not allowed to pray on the Temple Mount, though they are allowed to visit. He would like to see that changed. And he was asked about that this afternoon. But then I think he had an interesting response about the fact that the status quo has already changed. We're in uncharted territory, as you just said, because we have weapons on the Temple Mount. We haven't had this before, and this means that Israel is going to have to guarantee some security for themselves to make sure that this isn't used as a bastion or an arms depot for Hamas or Fatah or any other Palestinian group that wants to attack Israelis. Remember, the very Western, I guess it's the Western Wall or the Wailing Wall of the Jews is the Western Wall of the Temple Mount.
Right.
So on one side of the wall, up at a higher elevation, you have the Temple Mount itself, and that's where these Muslims are supposedly worshiping, but now they have weaponry. And on the other side of that, you have sometimes thousands of Jews piled in to the Kotel, or the Western Wall Plaza, praying at the Western Wall. This could be extremely dangerous for them if this security situation doesn't change. And I think I've got a clip from Yehuda Glick talking about this as well.
Last Friday, 3 people, in the name of God, used the exact opposite of what God believes, of what God is. God is a God of life. God is a God of peace. And in the Holy Plaza, they shot and killed, murdered 2 Israeli policemen who were there just to promote, to support the public order. I want to just remind you all that on Temple Mount, according to the agreements between Israel and the Muslim world, today led by Abdallah in terms of the waqf, the agreement is that we are in charge of the sovereignty, Israeli sovereignty, we are in charge of the security. All the religious activity, authority on Temple Mount is in the hands of the waqf. Last Friday, things changed. Until now, we were under the impression that something like that couldn't happen. And therefore, out of respect to the people coming to visit the Temple Mount and coming to pray at the Temple Mount, Israel allowed free access. We today cannot allow for the tiniest chance for this to happen one more time. It already happened one time too much. And we have to do whatever we can to make sure it doesn't happen again.
Well, that's Yehuda Glick in a statement that he made earlier today in Jerusalem. Our Jerusalem correspondent there, Brent Noctegal, on hand to capture that audio. Last Friday, as he brought out there, things changed. Pretty amazing statement.
Yeah, certainly is. And it's definitely something I got the just looking at the defiant Waqf leader, defiant Sheikh of Al-Aqsa, and then to look from the Israeli position and, you know, you find a solution for Israel if you think it's so simple. How is Israel going to protect themselves if they can't ensure that weapons and even increasingly stronger weapons than that aren't being found on the Temple Mount? They have to do something, and yet doesn't look like the Arab world is going to back down either.
It's an impossible situation. Let me just, before we let you go, let me just read another, you probably didn't see this if you've been out out in the field all day, but this is from the Times of Israel. And I just think it's interesting because we know that from Zechariah 14 that it's going to be a clash, a violent clash in Jerusalem that leads to the city being split in two. And so you have everything that we've been talking about here over the last 10 or 15 minutes. And then there was this from the Times of Israel. Bill to hinder East Jerusalem withdrawal clears first hurdle, so it's not all the way through yet, but it says here, lawmakers on Wednesday approved in its preliminary reading a bill that would require a special two-thirds majority in the Knesset to relinquish any part of Jerusalem to the Palestinians under a future peace accord. Now, you know the history here, and we've covered it at length in the Trumpet, that, I mean, Israel has been inclined to give away property or land all over the place, you know, Gaza, wherever, but not, if these lawmakers get their way, not East Jerusalem. It says here, the bill, which was proposed by Jewish Home MK, and he's got a hard-to-pronounce name, and has coalition backing, cleared the initial hurdle in the Knesset with 58 MKs in favor and 48 opposed. And then listen to this part. It says, the goal of the bill is to prevent concessions as part of diplomatic deals. Jerusalem, he's quoted as saying, this MK, Jerusalem will never be on the negotiating table. And so, I mean, and then you add to that what we just heard in that soundbite. Last Friday, everything changed on the Temple Mount. I mean, the line in the sand has been drawn. I mean, clearly you can see the stage is being set for Zechariah 14. It's not going to be a peaceful negotiation that hands over East Jerusalem to a possible Palestinian state. It's going to come as a result of violence, the division of that city.
Yeah, I've actually got the Zechariah booklet written by your father open right now to page 82, and he basically says this. I forget when he first wrote this, but I think it's going back about 10 years. And he talked about half of Jerusalem going into captivity, and he talked about the Temple Mount being this match that makes that happen. But he said that it goes into captivity, quote, suggesting some violence in the process. And as you say, just from that listening to that bill that's almost passed, that's gone through the first couple of stages of it, the Jews aren't going to give it up.
Right.
The Jews aren't going to give it up. And your father even said that going back a decade now, it's going to have to be actually fought over.
Yeah. Well, some fascinating insights there, Brent. We certainly appreciate you coming on the program. We're going to have to do this again. We planned this, boy, right at the last minute. Thanks to Brent and Sam and Richard for making this happen on such short notice. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email us your comments or feedback, you can send those to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. Herbert W. Armstrong long forecast the arrival of a military superpower in Europe. In a world where European nations can't rely on the United States, one in which they fear Russia and face the constant threat of radical terror, their only hope of survival is to band together. This is what we see happening, and what we see happening was prophesied in your Bible. request Germany and the Holy Roman Empire to learn about the history of Germany and the Holy Roman Empire and to understand where the events in Europe today are leading. 3,000 years ago, the prophet Daniel explained that at the time of the end, radical Islam would push against Europe. That time is now. We are witnessing the first manifestations of this Islamist push against Europe, and it's leading to a spectacular clash between these two prophesied kings, the King of the North and the King of the South. What does the Bible say about the identity of these two kings? What about the end time? Will everyone be affected by these events? Request our two booklets, The King of the South and Germany and the Holy Roman Empire. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
Well, following our interview there with our Jerusalem correspondent, I just want to go through a few bits here from one more story that came out. It was actually earlier in the week on Monday, and it gives a pretty good overview of not only what happened there on the Temple Mount, but just how significant this is. This is from Al Monitor. You know where that comes from, Sam? Is that a think tank in D.C.? Okay. And it says here, there's no more horrifying scenario for Israel and perhaps the entire Middle East than a serious attack on the Temple Mount, which to Muslims is the Haram al-Sharif site of Al-Aqsa Mosque. Such a scenario has been keeping Israeli defense officials awake at night since 1967, when Israel took control of the eastern part of Jerusalem. It says at 7 a.m. July 14th, so that would be last Friday, it looked as if that very scenario might unfold, this horrifying nightmare scenario. And then it describes the terrorist attack, these three Israeli Arabs that shot those two Israeli police officers, and then how that the response was swift, and the three terrorists were killed. And Al Monitor says here, it was a brief incident suppressed in a matter of minutes, but it was enough to send shockwaves across Israel and the Palestinian territories. Really, really, all as Brent brought out, all over the world, because there's just so many eyes on Jerusalem. Shockwaves across Israel, shockwaves across the Palestinian territories. And then it discusses some of the security measures or concerns there on the Temple Mount. It says here, for years, the Waqf has been controlled by Jordan. Israel considers Jordan to be an important regional ally, so it supports this arrangement. Again, we talked about some of this in the previous segment. But it just says here, nevertheless, the situation has been changing rapidly over the past few years. And so here again, we see, as I've been bringing out with some of the other topics that we've touched on in recent programs, we see a dramatic shift in so many of these events just in the last few years. And Al Monitor brings that out in its report from Monday. In the last segment there with Brent, I talked about that prophecy in Zechariah 14, verses 1 and 2. Let me just read a couple of these verses to you. It says, "Behold, the day of the Lord comes, and your spoil shall be divided in the midst of you." It says, "For I will gather all nations against Jerusalem to battle." I mean, this is giving us a big overview of events that lead right up to the return of Jesus Christ. Read the entirety of Zechariah 14, and you see there that when you get to verse 4, it's talking about the return of Christ to the Mount of Olives, which is just right across the Kidron Valley there from that Temple Mount mound. Against Jerusalem to battle, it reads, and it says in verse 2, "And the city shall be taken, and the house," this is talking about the city of Jerusalem just before the return of Christ. "The city shall be taken," it says, "and the houses rifled, and the women ravished, and half of the city shall go forth into captivity, and the residue of the people shall not be cut off from the city. This is that passage that, as Brent mentioned in the last segment, my father draws attention to in his booklet on Jerusalem and prophecy, and others of his writings as well. But here Zechariah gives us the big overview. God's going to gather all nations against Jerusalem to battle. I mean, that's talking about when Jesus Christ returns and gathers his armies to face off against the armies of men. But before that happens, earlier on in the fulfillment of these many prophecies about the Great Tribulation, Matthew 24, 21, and 22, it says, the city shall be taken, and the houses rifled, and the women ravished. That has more to do with the king of the north coming against the king of the south. We've gone through those prophecies already this week. But then that last phrase there, half of the city shall go forth into captivity. So it's as if it works backward, the chronology. Half the city is going to go forth into captivity. That's referring to the Arab takeover of East Jerusalem. That's something that, just like with the king of the south, I went through that with you on Monday's show. I mean, we've been forecasting this for years. We've been forecasting this for decades. And now look at what's happening, and look at how fast it's happening just in the last few years. Well, there's other prophecies that you're probably familiar with, so many of you. Hosea 5 and verse 13 talks about Judah's wound and the sickness that's there in Ephraim, little Judah, and Great Britain. And what does it say there? It's in the case of Judah, it says Judah goes to the Assyrian. Judah, I mean, there's not many allies for the Jews today. And soon it's going to reach out to, of all people, of all nations, Germany. But going back to this wound, what have we seen? I talked about all of the land that they've given up for peace. And it's so elusive, isn't it? Give up Gaza, and that just introduced more war, more rockets coming in from Gaza. They let go of the buffer zone up in Lebanon years ago. They gave back Sinai years ago. I mean, that's been their plan in this so-called peace process, to give up land for peace, and it's just bringing their enemies closer and closer to them. And their enemies keep saying, we want to wipe you off the map. We want to blow you up. This is going to get a lot worse before it gets any better. But that peace process, as my father has written about at length, it's a wound. It's wounded Israel. It hasn't helped Israel. I mean, they're surrounded. They're just on a tiny strip of land. It's just a few miles wide at its narrowest point. And they've got enemies from every direction. And they've got Arab leaders now calling for a day of rage because of a metal detector. You can even look at a separate part of this story and see how, I mean, all the eyes of the world are on Jerusalem, but you go back to last Friday and look at how some of the reporting was so slanted. I mean, the attack was those three terrorists. And it's within hours. It's all it takes is a few hours now. And before you know it, certainly a few days, and before you know it, Israel's the bad guy. Israel's the one on the attack. Just when they're trying to defend themselves, just when they're trying to protect people who go up onto the Temple Mount, whether Arab or Christian or Jew. It's as if they're going against the whole world. Well, you look at that prophecy in Daniel 11. We've been through that already this week. The clash between the king of the north and the king of the south. The whirlwind attack after radical Islam just keeps pushing and pushing and pushing. But in that same prophecy, you can continue reading on from verse 40 and see that when the king of the north enters into the glorious land, that many countries are going to be overthrown. That king of the north is going to enter into Jerusalem. Jerusalem. And then you can read there about tidings out of the east troubling the king of the north. I mean, so many prophecies factoring into this, but a lot of them center right around Jerusalem. Jerusalem's the powder keg. Verse 5, it says, and this is verse 45, sorry, Daniel 11, I'm kind of bouncing around. But Daniel 11 and verse 45 says, and he, that's referring to the religious head of this Euro beast, this king of the north, he shall plant the tabernacles of his palace between the seas in the glorious holy mountain. I mean, that's talking about a religious leader moving his headquarters to this holy mountain between the two seas. It's talking about Mount Zion. Of course, it's going to be a short-lived relocation because that same city, that same mount, is where that Jesus Christ is going to plant the kingdom or the government of God at his return. It says over in Zechariah 12 in verse 3, just about this city, that Jerusalem's just going to be a burdensome stone for all people. I mean, anyone that gets involved, and that Al Monitor article brought that out. Everyone wants a piece of Jerusalem, and anyone that gets involved comes to regret it. But there is hope for Jerusalem. I mean, the name itself means City of Peace. That's where God is going to establish his throne. But before that, of course, you see all these prophecies. They're really coming to the fore, these many verses that we've been reading. Well, that's all that we have time for on today's program. If you'd like to email us, don't forget the email address is td@kpcg.fm. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Thank you for joining us today. We'll see you tomorrow.